Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Everybody, welcome aboard another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Coming to you on this Thursday. Glad to have you the day after. Let's see, Indiana. Nice win last night at Simon Scott Assembly Hall. Another 100-point performance. Another shooting clinic. Man, gee whiz. Those shots are just amazing at the rate at which they are hitting. 57% from 3-point last night. Just or behind the stripe on deep shots. Crazy. Just crazy. Now, that's not going to sustain itself throughout the year, but the sheer fact that they've been able to do that so far, it's pretty crazy. How's your day going? How are you? Another beautiful day out there. My goodness gracious. We could not ask for better weather right now. It's pretty crazy out there. What is today's spectacular high? It's going to get up to nearly 60 degrees today, 59 here. I hope it is doing that with nothing but sunshine where you are. Appreciate you guys being with us, no matter where or how you're listening. Big games coming up this weekend for Indiana football, of course, and many others. The final home game for the Hoosiers and in the high school ranks, man, we're at the regional rank. Big weekend for all the high schools. Go out and see a high school game on Friday if you can. And then Saturday, you're going to have to get there a little early, but get some tailgating in and check out the Indiana Hoosiers taking on the Wisconsin Badgers as they look to go 11-0 to complete their second consecutive undefeated season at home. And looking for a crowd that stays through all four quarters to salute that team. Senior day to salute those seniors when they come off the field. So, yeah, there's a nice, John says he thinks DeVries paved over that big hump in a big way. Yeah, they're the shooting, I don't know what to say about it for Indiana. It's pretty spectacular. Now, you can't say they haven't done this against Joe Schmoes. I mean, they just played a Marquette team that's a solid team. This Milwaukee team, they might beat Marquette. This they're favored to win the Horizon League, by the way. Yeah, this is a good. And I was thinking last night, I'm like, boy, this Milwaukee team, they're not bad. So, yeah, you cannot go off of old whatever. They're going to be a pretty good team. Pretty good. So that's going to end up being a good win. But it just shows how solid this team is. Now, is that always going to sustain itself? No. Looking forward to seeing them going against – up against the rebounding mercy. That's going to be an issue. Boy, did they get slaughtered on the rebounds last night. I need to pull up the stats. And I just remember that, wow, they were getting crushed on the rebounding. And they were allowing Milwaukee to make some hay with second chance points. But let's see, where is that? There we go.
But they made a lot of hay with. Gritty's getting her sausage balls and her jello shots are ready for Saturday. Her sweaty balls and jello shots. Gritty's bringing sweaty balls and jello shots to the tailgate. Yeah, your last tailgate of the year, people. Last football game of the year, by the way, as well. Indiana would go on to shoot 57% last night from the field overall. 50% on three-point shooting. That was the 57 before they put the subs in. But that's another 14 of 28 night. That's back-to-back 14 of 28 three-point shooting nights. You've got to be kidding me. Now, they did take a step down at the free throw line. Only shot 70% last night. What the hell's going on here? 70%. Cannot have that. Not acceptable. It's funny. I mean, I'm saying that to be funny. 70% was a mark they were dreaming of hitting in recent years. Turnovers, again, they forced 15 turnovers. They forced that Milwaukee team to turn the ball over 15 times, 7 for Indiana, but 24 points off of those 15 turnovers. Mercy. That is getting done. At the end of the day, Indiana out-rebounded Milwaukee. I don't know how the hell that happened because they were getting out-rebounded by a substantial margin. For most of the game, but they came back to win the rebounding battle. Surprising. And they were getting crushed on the offensive boards, but it ended up being just a two rebound separation. I got to give them credit for that. Second chance points, Indiana ends up with 13-11 over Milwaukee. That's they really bench points, 25 points in the paint. Fast break points again, Indiana, 14-6. Little things like that. Indiana uses to their advantage. But surprised to see they won that rebounding battle. Man, they were losing that. How about Milwaukee? 39% at the free throw line. 7 of 18. Man, they're a good team, but you cannot. 39%. Oh, holy smokes. That's bad. And they were shooting 50% on behind the line, deep line for a good part of the game. And then they just went ice cold. They were 4 of 8. I remember this. They were 4 of 8. They ended up 5 of 17. Wow. Yeah. They went ice cold, baby. Of course, throw some defense on top of that as, Brian says, when IU wins the rebounding battle this season, could talk that up as a win. That's probably a definite statement there. Anytime Indiana, if they win a rebounding battle, they're winning that game. But, man, their shooting is pretty amazing. Yikes. And the scoring. They're averaging 100. What are they averaging, 100 points a game right now? I mean, I think they won one game at 98, and the other two, they've hit the 100 mark. But probably puts them at 99, but not a bad scoring average to start the season out. Holy smokes. Let's see. What else I got? Coach Griff will be joining us next. We'll talk some football. Basketball, let's see, how long are they off? Let's get this IU basketball schedule. I don't remember exactly when the next game is. I'm not going to fib. Incarnate World. This Sunday. No, next Sunday, the 16th. So we get a week off. Right? I'm always confused. I can take a break. It's what I ought to do. Bring Griff in. Just kidding. We're going to do just that. Appreciate you being with us. Lots more coming up from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We're back with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Almost forgot what day it was, Coach. Glad to have you along. How are you doing? Crossover season is here.
Do you just pop up a tent there at on the between the basketball arena and football stadium so that you can just be ready to go either direction?
Yeah, exactly. Just got a little just pretend like I'm tailgating and throw a little little sleeping bag and a cot out there and just,
yeah, a little grill action.
Might as well just bring the camper. Jump in somebody else's. There'll be some people overnighters there already from the football game as Indiana taking on Wisconsin out of Madison today. So not today, of course,
senior day, big game, no question. Been watching these Badgers on video. Very, very good defense. And I was thinking about this. This year, it seems like most of the Big Ten teams are either good on one side of the ball or the other, but there's not a complement of offense and defense like Ohio State has and Indiana has, you know, where both their offenses have been highly efficient for the better part of the year, you know, total yardage, you know, running the football. Indiana's like first in the Big Ten still and rushing and things of that matter. But there's a lot of teams that are really good on one side of the ball and not so great on the other side. And that's kind of Wisconsin. Iowa was kind of that way. And now they've gotten a little bit better. You know, Iowa's defense, very good, stellar defense. This Wisconsin defense, you know, they're only putting, you know, they're only giving up 22 points a game and only 111 yards on the ground rushing. I mean, this defense is a darn good defense that Indiana's going to face again. And, you know,
And the problem is they just haven't had offense this year, but a big part of that is because they haven't had a damn quarterback. He lost game one.
They've had so many different quarterbacks. You know, they were very high and hopeful early on because that Billy Edwards Jr. kid came in from Maryland where he had done pretty well the previous year under Mike Locksley. And he gets hurt the very first week, and he hasn't been back since. Then they put another guy in. He gets knocked out. And they're basically down to two redshirt freshmen and a true freshman, I think, at that. So they've suffered in that arena. Typical Wisconsin offensive line, though. They're big, they're strong, but they just haven't really been able to muster any offense. But they've kind of adapted the Iowa philosophy of trying to win ugly like they did against Washington last week because they just shut Washington down. I mean, they did not let Washington breathe at all on offense. And so Indiana's going to have to be prepared to get another game where they're going to go up against a stout front six, good secondary, and they're going to have to play very good on offense once again, but they've got to be able to run the football. They've got to stop. I mean, I'm sorry I'm rambling here, but these are the things that I pop up that I'm starting to see with this Indiana team, and I don't mean to be, you know, one way or the other on this observation. But there's a definite trend here against teams that are very stout in their front. Iowa, Penn State, I could name another in there probably as well, where Indiana does not run the football very good against. They struggle to run the football. And they cannot have that inadequacy against those teams because they're not going to face any bad defenses if they get to the Big Ten championship game and they get into the first round of the playoffs or second round of the playoffs, however that settles out. So they've got to come up with something offensively that gives them the best chance to run the football. I've not seen any RPOs in about 3 weeks. And now that doesn't mean they're not calling them, but there just hasn't been the normal RPO system that we've come to accustomed to in the last couple of weeks. And that may be because defenses are taking it away and they're forcing them to run the football and they can't run it against power, you know, powerful teams like a Wisconsin, like a Penn State, like an Iowa. And if they can't get that fixed, they're going to be in a world of hurt. And it just about cost them a week ago, because you're not going to be able to pull things out of your hat. And maybe some of that's they're beat up front. Maybe they're just beat the hell up front. And it's, yeah, that's, I mean, not you get, good.
You've lost Drew Evans. You've got other guys that are, Khalil Benson's been dinged up. Zen Mikowski, he's been in and out, moved. They've got a lot of dinged up offensive linemen, and they've been moving pieces and parts around. So, yeah, it's been a big thing. This bye week coming up, I know that want to get to that bye week so you can rest.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't cure everything, but it gives you a week where you're not playing and not then another whole week to rest. Of not playing. So
yeah,
it allows things to heal that just can't heal right now. Indiana will be playing, like, you know, unless they lose to Wisconsin and Purdue, playing in the Big Ten championship game.
Oh yeah.
Something that they've never done. And that is a mark of greatness.
Absolutely.
But now I have to ask, is this a pointless endeavor? Because you're gaining next to nothing with everything to lose, not from losing the game, but from the players that might get injured in this game, the things that you're going to have to show that you'd rather not show ahead of the playoffs, playing a game like that, even though you're going to have 3 weeks off. What's the point in playing this game? Really?
Yeah, I mean, that again, you get into this time of year, and that's what I was trying to point out, is especially along the offensive line, because those kids are banging a lot, is the number of plays that those guys have been in is an enormous amount. And when you're not trying to create adequate backups and such, and it's easy to sit on the sideline and say this. I've been in the same situation thinking, okay, we're going to play 6-7 kids along the offensive line. And then you get into the rhythm of the game. It's like, don't screw with it. You know what I mean? And so you're correct. I mean, you get to this time of year, you worry about what you just stated. Now, if they win, they essentially clinch a berth into the Big Ten championship game, because they have a game in hand on about everybody else in the conference except Ohio State, which that doesn't matter. You know, they would have to theoretically lose the next two games of the year not to potentially be in the Big Ten championship game. So I do think, you know, it is a pretty correct statement that they've all but locked up, but they've got to do it by winning one more game. And sometimes that's the hardest game. But I hope that they're taking some acknowledgement of some of these games that they've been in, you know, the Oregons and things of that nature, that Iowa, why isn't their efficiency running the football on first and second down not making it in a lot of ways simplistic on third downs like it has against other teams? I mean, they were Saturday against Penn State, their third down efficiency was the worst of the year. I mean, they were 5 of 12, I think 4 of 12, something like that on third downs. They've never been that bad. And a lot of that was because they got in a lot of long yardage situations because they weren't being able to do anything on first and second down consistently. So,
and this is something they're going to face, pretty thoroughly in the college football playoffs, because they're going to start deep in the playoffs, which means they're going to be facing a good team. They're not going to be facing some Joe Schmo, likely, no. And very likely an SEC team with the sheer fact they're going to have five and possibly six teams in this thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's the thing that I think it's a question that has to be asked, you know, why is it against teams like that are pretty stout up front, the effectiveness of the running game just hasn't been there, you know, hasn't been to the degree that we see it against Maryland or we've seen against, you know, other Big Ten teams this year, Illinois, for instance, you know, that game, they ran the ball down their throat. And some of these teams, especially in this time and era, day and age of the season, late November and all that good stuff, you got to be able to run the football. You've got to be able to run the football with some efficiency, and they're just not running it against these powerful teams in the front six. And the question is why? Why isn't that? And if teams have found ways to shut down their RPO game because of how they play them, and somebody's found the secret sauce, then they're going to have to do more than just what they've done in order to get it going. And the other thing I think is against these teams that are just flat out pinning their ears back, they've got to have a screen game. They've got to have a screen game to help these offensive linemen out, because when teams just pin their ears back and come at you, just like Penn State did, they didn't ever try one tailback screen to Hemby and Black, who are as good as receivers as they have out of the backfield, but they're not finding ways to get them the ball outside the backfield. And that's some things that you have to do through self-scout. You have to be very deliberate in that, and you got to ask the questions, why is this happening? And to your point, you can't always say, well, we're banged up, or we don't. Well, we're a Division I football team. If we're that banged up, then we better put somebody else in who's healthy, because half of a guy is not good enough against Penn State, Iowa, Ohio State. When you're playing those top teams, it's not good enough.
So, I think that Drew Evans will be back for the Purdue game, because that will follow the bye week, and that will give him the game, one game, you know, a game to kind of knock the rust off, so to speak.
Yeah.
and then play in the Big Ten championship.
I don't even know what's wrong with Drew Evans. I don't have you gotten any indication whether it's a leg or head?
I believe it is a lower leg injury, but I don't know that. Very, very particular on injuries. So I understand that. If I don't know, I try not to speak on them. So, they keep it very hush hush. If you make a mistake, they get very upset. I would expect that they get him back. I think that they, you could have used him in that Penn State game. So obviously, it's something that's still bothering him a little bit.
Yeah,
it's probably obviously it's a little more than they let on. And I wonder, do you try to just wait and get to the bye week, you know, through the bye week with him as well? So,
yeah, these are all great questions. And I think that's a very poignant question to be answered, as you know, when it comes down to this. And hey, I'm happy as heck for Charlie B. I mean, that kid, you know, has been waiting for an opportunity. He got it and made the best of it. And that was what they needed, because if they didn't have that on Saturday, they would have been in a world of hurt, because that kid made several big plays, several.
Oh my. Yes. And none bigger than the one that preceded the touchdown.
Absolutely. Boundary there where he got the foot in too.
Yeah. Just he's out of bounds. He catches the ball out of bounds basically. And mm-hmm. is able to almost levitate. And got his foot in.
He made two of those on the boundary. One of them was a little bit more in bounds, but where he had to go up on a kind of 50-50 ball and go make a play against the talented corner that Penn State had and has. And that kid went up and battled and got it done. And that's what I mean. You got to feel so happy for that kid, because he's got a chance. He took advantage of it, made some big plays, and now it gives him an extra weapon with that kid. And he's played well, and they're going to need those guys, especially on the perimeter, these last few weeks of the season. But no, these are just some things from watching tape and watching some of the things that have occurred in games that concern me when it comes to Indiana and their ability to effectively run the ball, even though they're the number one ranking rush offensive team in the Big Ten. But if you throw out some of those games and just look at it against teams that are equal or above them in terms of some of their abilities and averages, they've struggled. They've struggled. And there's a reason they struggled. And what is it? And why aren't they being able to correct it? Because it's happened consistently over the last few, even last year and this year.
Yeah, and the beat up offensive line is part of the reason probably why you're not seeing the RPOs as we did early. It's because it seems like it's matching a timeline there.
It could be
where they've gone away as the injuries have been there. So very
and
much,
I don't disagree with that assessment at all. I mean, you're probably correct in that philosophical, you know, debate in terms of the injuries and stuff, but if I'm going to play devil's advocate and we're a P5, you know, a P4 team,
yep,
that doesn't fly in terms of the reason why something isn't happening, because you can't have.
Why? What do you think? Why do you think?
I can't sit here and put my finger on as much as I'd love to, but what I have seen from them is in some ways an oversimplified run game where they're utilizing more. They want to run the zone. They run the zone play as if it's the only play they have in their playbook. There's no gap schemes. There's no power counter schemes where you're trying to bring in, not to say that they haven't ran them, but they don't run them enough in a game setup. Because if you're going to run those type of plays, you have to rep the you-know-what out of them in practice. And I just don't think they're giving the time and energy to those type of plays because they want to run inside zone with the RPO system or whatever. And they're not doing enough in order to, when that's shut down and not there, what can you do? And you just can't run inside zone and think you're going to knock a Penn State or Ohio State off the ball enough and create steam. You've got to find ways to double team, block back, pull, kick out, and go, and do it in a significant way. But, you know, by now it's kind of too late in that respect if you haven't repped it enough, because you're asking for trouble in that respect. So I'd like to see them more do that in some games. But again, I'm not sitting in on these conversations. I'm just trying to be the devil's advocate. Yeah. From 30,000 feet up. And it just kind of struck me how much they've struggled to run the football against these more power front four, front six teams. And not
why not some jet sweeps?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't question you at all. I mean, you got
no. I'm asking why not some jet sweeps? Why?
Well,
why
I'm not don't.
Getting.
Yeah, I don't know if they feel like they don't have that guy like they did when
Tevin Coleman or.
Well, last year they had Miles Price. I think they did it with him. You know, kid had some speed and stuff, but. Yeah, you like to see some things like that. You can run a whole, run game and power reads and RPO with the power and all those things that you're doing off of those plays as well as you do against inside zone. I like to see them run some more, play action naked boots and,
naked. Boot. Let's all get naked.
Well, you know, that big pass they threw to Becker down the middle of the field there in the second half was off of a play action boot because they got the card out in there, and he made a heck of a block, that kid, the third teamer that was in and started. He made a heck of a block on that throw that Mendoza hit Charlie down the center of the field on that big post route. And they hadn't done that more than once or twice this year. So, again, I do think they try to run – they try to be overly simplistic on offense to a degree with what they do, especially in the run game, because they've always been the last couple of years inside and some outside zone concepts, but more inside zone than anything.
Well, and this is going to be the biggest recruiting weekend at Indiana that Steve Wiltfong from
O3
knows of. And, you know, I'm going to try to get Steve on tomorrow, but this is a gigantic recruiting weekend. They are hitting up the ticket office big time, as they've got Torrey Davis coming in. He's a UCLA commit.
Yeah, they got three or four like that, you know, that are committed elsewhere.
They got some Matt Sieg, DeMonte Timms, Darnell Collins. There's some five stars coming in, multiple. So
Steve's article's great. So those that can't wait till tomorrow, go read it on the Hoosier.com. Yeah,
go to the Hoosier.com. I'm telling you, I keep telling you people, if you want to know what's going on, it's in the Hoosier.com. They have the breaking news, the commitment stories, everything. And I'm telling you, if you go there, if you go there and sign up, let me know. You go into the drawing for one of these beautiful Adidas jackets. Coats.
Yeah, those are nice. I've had those before.
Man.
I was getting swag when I was coaching.
But the most important thing is you get the up-to-date information.
Absolutely.
We'll talk more about this later on, but well, I appreciate you. I know you've got to run.
Yeah, I got to run for a while. If I can jump back on later, I will. But had a dishwasher go kaput.
Well, we'll be here. Guess what? We'll be here. We've got more coming up. Dustin
Schutte
joins us next.
Come tonight. We'll see you, buddy.
Oh, that's right. At the Hoosier tailgate, you can join Coach at thehoosier.com as well.
All right, 7:30.
You can get it all. You can get it all. Absolutely. Hey, we're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Thursday. Glad to have you along, no matter where, how you're listening. And Dustin Schutte joins us now. How are you, sir, from Purdue Boilermakers on SI? Boilers on SI, the official term. Basketball getting underway. We're seeing a little bit from Purdue, a little bit from Indiana, some other Big Ten teams. It's early. Michigan had a rough game the other night. Michigan State played. Illinois looked good. I thought it was going to be Michigan. Maybe it's Illinois. I don't know. Illinois looked really good. They beat a good Texas Tech team with JT Toppin. Who's going to be the best team in the Big Ten? I don't think it's going to be Purdue. I really don't. But I think they'll be in that mix, but I don't think that they're going to be the best team. I don't know who's going to be. Like I said, I thought it was going to be Michigan, but boy, I mean, everybody gets to have an off game, but
yeah,
makes you wonder.
Yeah. I mean, November is a time to kind of see what's all going on right now. And Michigan had their hands full with Wake Forest. That was a Wake Forest team that was picked to like 11th in the ACC or something. I'm not sure where exactly they fell. So they had trouble there. That was basically a home game for them. They went to Detroit. Illinois, that Andre Stojakovic looked real good against.
Imagine that.
That was an impressive, and Kylan Boswell played really well. I was really impressed by watching Illinois. I'm going to be interested to see tonight. I think we're going to get maybe a little bit of a better understanding of what to expect from Purdue. Obviously not the best showing in that game against Oakland, only winning by 10, but they played their first two games without Trey Kaufman-Wren. So they're going to have him back tonight on the road against No. 8 Alabama. So we got another top 10 showdown. But I think the Big Ten race, Michigan State, they beat Arkansas. So Indiana's looked really good. They had that big blowout win against Marquette. just a lot of really good, interesting teams in the Big Ten, at least to start. We'll see how it goes, but it's only November. So a lot of time to make up some ground here.
Oh, absolutely. It's early. It's we've seen this in football. You know, you teams just get better and you get better. They're all going to get better. Purdue is going to get better. They've got new members on the team. Indiana is going to get better. Michigan's going to get better. The scary part is Illinois is going to get better. And teams like that. So the Big Ten is going to have its share of teams to look out for this season. We just don't know who they are just yet, but I don't think it's going to take long to figure that out.
Well, I think there's probably, I mean, I haven't seen UCLA play yet. I think they'll be, Washington should be better than they were last season because they got the two kids from USC, Desmond Claude and Yates. I can never remember the kid's name. Yates, I think it is. Either way, there's a, I mean, like top to bottom, this is going to be a better conference than I think it was last year, maybe even the last 2 years. But at the top, it's really going to be a bloodbath because, as you mentioned, Purdue's going to be in the mix. Michigan's going to be in the mix. Michigan State, Illinois, those four teams at least are going to be at the top. And I would be shocked if UCLA's not in that mix as well. We'll see. I do love these early season big time matchups, though. We've already seen, like we said, Michigan played Wake Forest, and I think they probably got some other big non-conference games. Purdue's got Alabama. Illinois was willing to host Texas Tech. So we get at least somewhat of a glimpse as to what these teams can do and what they can accomplish. But if you wanted to ask who the best team in the Big Ten is after 2 weeks, obviously we don't know. But Illinois is maybe the winner right now because they looked really good the other night.
Yeah, I was banging on Michigan to be that team based on all that they've brought in. They brought in the talent. They brought in a great player from Illinois. They brought in a great player from UCLA. Cannibalized a little bit of the Big Ten to improve their team. But do not underestimate Underwood, because Brad Underwood does this year after year. He brings in a damn new team and they are competing in the top four of the Big Ten. And I think it's remarkable. I think he has been the most consistent coach in the Big Ten over the last 4 to 5 years, without question, as far as just being there. I know Matt Painter.
Matt Painter is probably number one, but Brad Underwood would be two in that category.
I guess the reason I think of is because what Matt Painter's done, he's had to do it with new teams every year, where Matt Painter's had basically the same team for the last 8 years, it seems like. But it would be both of those, but they both done it completely different in different styles. So I think what Brad Underwood is doing is very difficult, but he's got to win too.
He does. Well, it's interesting because Illinois is a really good program, so you wouldn't think they'd have as much turnover. And I'm not saying they've had a ton, but they've had more than you might think for a team that has the same amount of success as Illinois.
Well, so, they've lost some of it to the NBA.
Yeah, correct. They have, but then they've also lost some of those guys to the transfer portal and to Michigan, Morris Johnson, and it's interesting. But you're correct. I mean, he's done a really good job. They're consistently near the top. I think people and they didn't even have. I'm not going to get his name correct. Ivicic, however you pronounce his first name.
No, Ivicic.
He was. He did not play.
I can't remember it. If it was in front of me, I could say it, but I can't even. It's got to be written in front of me. What's it start out with? I forget what it is.
Yeah, I got to look at their. I have to look at their roster because I don't. His brother, I believe, plays on that team.
They have both the Ivicic brothers on there now.
The star from last year did not play. So that's another factor. Like they still beat a top 15 Texas Tech team at home without one of their top players. So that's, again, what I think a lot of people are kind of missing there. Now, it was at home, and obviously it's, again, still early in the season. So we'll see what happens. But that's been a game where in the past, Illinois's kind of hung around and been competitive, but they haven't won some of those games. So I think the fact that they were able to steal one, and with JT Toppin going off, that dude had 35 points and 10, 11 rebounds in that game. So it wasn't like they shut him down or he had a bad night. He was outstanding, player of the year caliber performance, and they still escaped with a win.
And I just see that Illinois now just signed a 6'9" three-star forward out of Iowa. So they just keep adding adding pieces to the puzzle. Illinois is going to be a team you have to deal with every year, year in, year out, just because Brad Underwood is spectacular at what he does. Tonight, the Boilers, they've got a match. They got a match up with Alabama. Roll Tide. That should be a that's going to be a difficult challenge for Purdue, I would think.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough because they're going to have to try to contain their defensive effort hasn't quite been where it needs to be. Their effectiveness on the glass, they gave up 20 offensive rebounds to Evansville in the first half. They gave up 9 offensive rebounds to Oakland and end up allowing 12 for the game. So that's one thing that they've needed to correct, and that's why they went out and got Oscar Clough, right, was to go in and fix that rebounding situation. Well, it hasn't looked much better in these first two games. And then on the defense, they've had trouble with, you know, containing the perimeter, and they'll play one of the best guards tonight in college basketball in LeBaron Filon. So I think Purdue's going to have the advantage in terms of their post play because I don't know that anybody's going to be able to muscle up against Oscar Clough down low as much as he struggled early on. But at the same time, this is an Alabama team that they're going to try to get to 100 points. So can Purdue, and we saw this in the Kentucky exhibition game, even though it was just kind of glimpses of it throughout the game, Purdue really did struggle with Kentucky's athleticism. And Alabama can push tempo. They can get down the floor fast. Whether you make or miss a basket, you got to get back defensively to try to slow them down. And not a lot of teams are able to do that. Purdue's had success the last couple of seasons. They were able to get the win last year. But again, Alabama last year was out without Chris Youngblood, who was a big key piece to what they did. And then, you know, 2 years ago, they had Zach Edey. So they were able to swallow up some of those defenders, kick it out for open threes. That's why I think having Trey Kaufman-Wren back tonight is so big, because when Purdue didn't shoot the ball well against Oakland, they didn't have a consistent guy that you could feed the ball into the post and get an easy 2 points. And that's what they can do with Trey Kaufman-Wren. He changes the game up for him, but he hasn't played. He hasn't played since the exhibition game. So is there going to be a little bit of a rust factor there? So this is going to be a really interesting game. Purdue, again, Purdue's defense hasn't been good. I think their offense can keep up with Alabama, but they're going to have to rebound and they're going to have to get some stops. And I mean, this is an Alabama team that just put up over 100 points against St. John's, and St. John's is pretty good. So it's going to be quite a test.
Yeah, and I assume this is on the road.
Yes, in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, yeah, in Tuscaloosa. They're going to look forward to this one. Get some Bama fans down there. They'll be throwing rolls of toilet paper all over the place. No, just kidding. But, yeah, Alabama, boy, since Nate Oates went there, has recharged Alabama basketball, and they have become a machine, but they still – they haven't won anything yet.
Well, they got to the Final Four, yeah, and they won a couple SEC titles. But, I mean, he's had – that's – for their program, it's what he's done. I just
– oh, absolutely. I mean, from where they were.
In 6 years, he's gone to the tournament 5 times. They've played in 4 Sweet 16s. They've won 2 SEC regular season titles and 2 tournament titles. And they've gotten to 1 Final Four and 2 Elite Eights. So he's had a lot of success. But here's the crazy thing, Jim. We talk about Purdue's schedule, and they'll play Marquette, Iowa State, Auburn. I know Marquette got roasted by Indiana, so maybe take that one with a grain of salt. But they've got some tough games coming up. How about Alabama? After tonight, they play Purdue tonight, then they'll play Illinois, then they'll play Gonzaga. They also have Clemson and Arizona on their schedule. Like, Nate Oates is not afraid.
I was going to say, not afraid, baby, bring it. But he knows that's going to be helpful, and that he's got confidence in his team. Whether they win or lose, they're not going to lose all those games, and they may not, and they're probably not going to win them all. But the committee at the end of the season is not going to take that. It's going to probably give them bonus points for playing that kind of a wicked schedule, especially if you if it's four games, you go 2-2, you're going to get a – I think you're going to get a bump from that, whatever that mark is. But, yeah, in I know that – I don't know what's in Purdue's – they've got a pretty decent pre-conference schedule as well.
Yeah, they'll play Alabama, then they go to the Bahamas, and they'll play Memphis, and then they'll play either Texas Tech or Wake Forest, so probably Texas Tech. Then in December, they've got Iowa State.
Michigan to overtime the other night.
Yep. Then they've got in December, they'll play Iowa State, they have Marquette, and they have Auburn. So it's not the most it's probably not the most challenging that they've had, but it's still up there, and it gets a little bit stronger if they play probably Texas Tech in that Baja Mar Challenge.
Yeah, Indiana has added Louisville and Kentucky in these December games, which I cannot understand why Louisville and Kentucky, that game was in early November and not mid-December like it used to be on a Saturday on CBS. It's just weird, but hey, that's what it is. But tonight for the Boilers, they big game, man. It's going to be tough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it will be. And this is going to be – they've got to play a lot better than they did those first two games. And especially in that second game, Matt Painter has talked about since the offseason, who are we going to be and what are we going to be able to do when we don't shoot the ball well? And they didn't shoot the ball particularly well in that Oakland game. And you saw it almost cost them. Like they were – they made the plays down the stretch because they had the better talent and the depth. But it was – it got a little too close for comfort, and that's why they are now no longer number one in the AP. They're ranked number two in the AP poll. So they got to come ready to play. I think, again, having Trey Kaufman-Wren available is a big boost for them because they can get they have somebody who can consistently get them buckets on the inside, maybe draw in the defense and kick it out for some open looks. But, they have to rebound better. They have to keep Alabama out of the paint, which is much easier said than done. With the way that their guards play, their ability to attack the rim, and their ability to get out and transition. The one thing I'll say is I think through the first two games, Purdue's averaging 5 turnovers per game. So they're protecting the basketball. They're getting good shots. They just have to shore up some things on the defensive end in the rebounding category. And you don't have to be perfect in November. We got a long way to go. But those are the two things that people want to see addressed. And we'll see just how much they've improved here since last Friday. So about a week since their last game.
We've got to take a break. If Dustin can stick around, he'll be back when we come back. And more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages.
Made it in the first half. What was kind of your source of frustration when you got into halftime kind of with the team?
I didn't think we were as hooked up as we typically put a lot of time into the last couple of days about, not getting on a hot streak. So, I thought the guys after halftime, though, did a much better job. I thought we were way more aggressive. We got them pushed out, and we were able to disrupt them a lot more.
I think the number now is like 299 points to open the year. Just like how early on with this team could you tell offensively you guys could be this good?
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. They just share the ball, and I think that's, what good offense comes from is, guys that are willing to move it, share it. We had great balance. One night it could be this guy, one night the next guy, but they really don't care. They don't talk about it. They just go out and play, and they take what the defense gives them. And I thought, again, tonight, 23 assists to 7 turnovers was really good, and I think that's why you get the shooting percentages you get because we're getting the right type of shots.
That was the head coach of the Indiana Hoosiers, Darren DeVries. And how about their assist level? Man, it has been crazy. I had the stats pulled up. I know I do somewhere. I'll have to get those pulled back up. But their stat numbers have been staggering, Dustin. And that is 27 assists last night. I think they had 28 on another night. It's just high numbers to go along with some unbelievably high three-point shooting. Back-to-back, 14 of 28 from three-point.
It's amazing what happens when they run an offense that people understand and know what players are supposed to be doing. I mean, I was just – that was always my biggest gripe about – well, really the last two coaches is I didn't understand what they were trying to accomplish offensively.
Yeah, and you weren't alone.
Look, I don't know how good Indiana is going to be. I would say they're probably going to be top – I don't want to say top half of the Big Ten because that sounds like an insult. I think they could be in the top third.
I don't know. I'm thinking eighth. Yeah, I've got them pegged at eighth.
Okay, well,
I don't know. We don't know. Oh yeah, definitely top half.
But I think what is the difference this year is regardless of where they finish, they're going to be a lot more fun to watch. And the last how many years it's been pretty boring to watch them play or frustrating to watch them play. I don't know that they have the players. I don't know how they're going to handle primetime matchups or the strength and the brute of the Big Ten. I mean, obviously we'll find out at some point, but at the same time, I think it's going to be a really fun and on a given night. This looks like to me peak, like Fran McCaffrey levels of Iowa when they were really rolling along and they could, you know, get out in transition and took a bunch of threes and knock him down. Well, that's correct. I mean, I don't know. Is Indiana going to play defense?
They're going to have to.
I mean, well, I know they're going to have to, but is that going to be a strength? That's my concern with them. They can score a lot of points.
I don't know it's going to be a strength.
Can you play defense better than Iowa played defense? Because then you can win a lot more games.
That I would say yes.
You don't have to be elite. If you can score at that level, they don't have to be an elite defensive team. They just have to be decent defensively. And that's about ending possessions, not giving up offensive rebounds, and getting creating a few turnovers, and maybe they're able to do that by wearing teams down by pushing the tempo. But this is just what it reminds me of through these first couple games is they're fast, they play tempo, they don't rely on their defense a lot, but their offense is really good, and that's why I say I don't know that that's going to be their identity all throughout DeVries's tenure. I don't know him well enough to know if that's what he's going to do constantly or if that's just what he has with this roster, but we'll see where they go defensively. You're right, they're going to have to be better, but they don't have to be a lot better when you can score 90 points.
Almost 100 points a game is what they're averaging, and I'm quickly trying to pull up all of the stats for the current games that they played. There we go. 23-9. Now I've got them in the three games that they've played. They have had over 20 assists in all three games.
Pretty good.
As a matter. Yeah. Not bad at all. I'm trying to quickly do math, which I'm not very good at.
I was told there would be no math.
Exactly. I didn't know that there was going to be quiz, man. I didn't know I would need a notepad. But let's see. They're averaging over 20 assists a game. They're averaging 50% three-point shooting. I mean,
that's unheard of.
I know it's just three games, but they're averaging 100 points a game, almost 50% three-point shooting and over 20 assists per game. That is fun basketball. And the rebounding, it came around last night. They were getting out-rebounded pretty substantially, but they closed that gap to like two rebounds. The offensive boards, there was a huge disparity there, but they closed that. And they take advantage by doing other things, by forcing you into turnovers. They forced 15 turnovers in that game last night, and make hay off of those. They score points off of those. So they're learning how to take advantage of the things that they need to take advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this is just, it's a completely different style. And I think regardless of what their record is this season, I think it shows you what, just through these first three games, it shows you what they're capable of doing. And they share the basketball. There's been clips of this team that have gone around where it seems like they pass the ball 11 times on one possession and create really good looks. And so you're going to get defenses moving, and you're going to be able to wear down some of those teams. That's why I think they have a shot. I don't think they're going to win the Big Ten, but I think they have a shot to be up in that top six, maybe the top seven, just because of how well they play offensively. I mean, it seems like, Jim, this is the thing to me that sometimes it's hard to get in college basketball, is it seems like they already have that team chemistry. Now, they haven't faced any adversity really yet. So what happens, you know, when you lose a couple games, or you're not shooting the ball well, or, you know, what have you, how do they handle that situation? But that can sometimes be the hardest thing. And if you're getting over 20 assists per game, that tells me that these kids know how to play the game. They're playing the game together well. They know where each other's going to be on the court. They know the offensive system. They know where they're supposed to be doing. They know where they're supposed to be at. And so that just shows you the potential that they have. And I guess I just keep saying it, like, it's so much different than the last, what, 8 seasons? I don't remember 10, how many, how long?
Probably 10. 10?
Okay.
Well, the last 2 would have been the Tom Crean era, but definitely the last 8. Easy the last 8.
Right. And so I think that's just what gives you hope, is you've seen what this team can do on the offensive end. They have that team chemistry. They're not going to have to worry about that. They're going to win some games that I think people are going to be surprised by this year. I think they're going to go up against some high-level teams. Like, Louisville's a really good team. And we saw that, was it last night or Tuesday night when they took down Kentucky?
Almost Kentucky's gave that one away.
Yeah, Kentucky's a solid team. So I think – but hey, I think they have – right now, the way they've played, they're going to have a chance in both of those games. So – it'll be interesting to see how this kind of unfolds as they go deeper into their schedule and they start to play tougher competition. But right now, I've liked what I've seen from them.
Absolutely. And we'll find out. And it's Purdue when they get TKR back tonight against Alabama. I wonder, Indiana fans, since they're playing an SEC team, are you pulling for Purdue?
That's a big no.
Yeah, it probably is. Like I said, when I was able to look at things from a fan's standpoint, Purdue was never, like when I was in college, I'm like, okay, I had to learn to not like Purdue.
Sure.
I did not have to learn to dislike Kentucky. I just didn't.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if that depends on where you're born too.
I was just getting ready to say it was wholly and sick solely because of where I grew up.
Yeah.
Growing up in Southern Indiana, not only Kentucky, but you get the Louisville stuff, but I didn't care about Louisville. Indiana didn't play Louisville that much, if at all, back then. So, but you know, the Kentucky thing was a regular season game that should have never been canceled, but they're back, baby. And it's all going to be fun. And everybody playing great games right now. I mean, this Alabama Purdue game, what a great game that is, just to have on the schedule, and plenty more coming I'm sure there's this weekend. That's the hard thing about having these great games right now, though, on the weekends, because you've still got great and important college football going on.
Well, some of us do. some of us can kind of mail it in on football season the rest of the way. We do have Houston plays Auburn on Sunday, and Saturday is UConn BYU. So there are a couple really good games. What Indiana does play this weekend, and then they get their bye next week, right? Their schedule's the same as Purdue.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just looking at former Cleveland State coach Kevin Mackey passes away at 80. Can't believe he was 80. Holy crap. But I remember, I guarantee Indiana fans remember him. Cleveland State knocking off Indiana. Mouse McFadden, all those guys. Man, he was the first Division I men's basketball coach to win an NCAA tournament game with a so-called Cinderella team. Died Tuesday from an apparent heart attack, his son Brian told ESPN. He was 80. Back in 86, he coached the Cleveland State Vikings in a first-round game against the number three-seeded Indiana Hoosiers, coached by Hall of Famer Bob Knight and led on the floor by All-American Steve Alford.
Wow.
Scrappy number 14-seeded Vikings from a conference few people were even familiar with, the Association of Mid-Continent Universities. How about that? It sounds like some wrestling title. Their run and stun upset the heavily favored Hoosiers 83-79 a year before Knight, Alford, Keith Smart, and Indiana would return to win the 1987 tournament. So how about that? That's what's so great about sports, great about all of this stuff. I mean, you look at Indiana, a national championship team, but the year before they get knocked off by Cleveland State, baby. The old Cleveland State, the old joke. Oh, Kentucky got in trouble again by the NCAA, so they're going to give Cleveland State 4 more years of probation. That's how the old joke goes,
people. Well, speaking of that, how is it possible? We were just talking about this the other day, yesterday. How is it possible that Michigan State had their wins vacated for Mel Tucker's violations and Michigan just got off scot-free?
You will never.
I mean, I know the answer to that question, but it makes no sense.
I have absolutely no idea. Now, I don't know if this is this actual.
This happened. Yes. This happened Wednesday night. It is correct. He committed and signed on Wednesday night. So Purdue,
we're talking now, about how you pronounce this kid's name.
I think it's Sinan Juan. I actually don't know how you pronounce his last name.
Well, that's okay. So what about him?
He's a 7-footer. He's at Georgetown Prep right now, which is in Maryland. He played for China in the FIBA World Cup. He averaged 5 blocks per game. I would say, I don't know if anybody listening is going to remember this name, but he is similar to Matt Harms, in my opinion. He's very good at getting up and down the floor. He can block shots.
People are not a fan of Mr. Harms.
I know they're not, but just in terms of his style of play, the way he can switch ends of the floor, very effective around the rim and blocking shots, uses his length really well. He's going to have to bulk up and be a more effective rebounder. He also needs to play in the post. He's going to come in a raw product, but I think his strength is on the defensive end. For reference, so he blocked 5 shots per game in that World Cup. Purdue's Daniel Jacobson ranked 2nd on that list, and he averaged 1.9 blocks per game. So he's pretty good on the defensive end, and that's going to be what they need. But this is now going to be, even if Daniel Jacobson were to transfer, you know, whatever the case might be, this will now be the 15th straight year that Purdue's had a 7-footer on their roster, at least one of them.
Crazy. It's just like there's an automatic pipeline that Matt Painter has with 7-footer. Oh, I'm sorry. You're 7 foot. You need to go talk to Matt Painter, please. I think that's what Darren DeVries said to someone the other night. Hey, he was talking to Ron Felling. Ron Felling was at the game last night. Former IU coach Ron Felling. At the Indiana game last night, I didn't get to talk to him, but I saw him. Wish I'd have had a second to go up and say hi, but he's been to several games. But he met Coach DeVries, and Coach DeVries, or he told him, presuming that I can ever do for you, Coach, let me know. And he says, oh, yeah, if you know of any 7-footers around, let me know. So, but yeah,
well,
there you go. They're at a premium, baby.
This joke, so somebody put this out there like 2 or 3 years ago, but it just stumbled across my timeline. And the tweet reads, Purdue basketball has a man on staff who just travels the world going from village to village asking the locals if they have heard tell of a giant.
That is about the facts of the matter, man. Brian says he was in Sports Illustrated as a high schooler at Oak Hill High School, Indiana, for most consecutively made free field goals. Or who's he talking about?
I'm not sure. Were they talking about somebody else up in?
Yeah, I'm not sure either. So who knows? Man, I hate when they throw up that marginal stuff that I don't know what they're talking about. But so what's up next for you, man?
Oh man, just Purdue basketball here tonight. Obviously, they play Alabama, so we've got that. And then on Saturday, Purdue plays at Washington. That's going to be the last game they have until they play Indiana. Not a lot. Just the only storyline there is Ryan Walters, former Purdue head coach, is the defensive coordinator at Washington, but that's about the extent of that. And then Sunday, Purdue hosts Akron, I think it is, back at Mackey Arena. So mostly Purdue basketball coverage this weekend, and we'll see just what this team's made of on Thursday night. So it should be fun.
Yeah, another big fun weekend for everybody all the way around. Matt Taylor coming up next. You're welcome to stick around to talk to Matt as well if you've got the time.
I can talk to Matt for a few minutes.
All right. Well, it's always a beautiful day. Matt would know what to do without a few of us staring at him. Hey, folks, glad to have you along. We've got plenty more coming from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We're rolling. Back at it with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Another great sports weekend coming up, and what a beautiful weekend it's going to be. Man, spectacular. Colts are off this weekend with a bye. We'll see if Matt Taylor's taking a bye on us. He might just be. I forgot that it was the bye weekend, but coming up after the bye, this could not be placed at a more perfect time for them, Dustin, because next up on the schedule for the Colts, Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, on the road.
Mahomes, Arrowhead Stadium. You're looking live at Arrowhead Stadium. Love that Britt Musburger would do that. You're looking live at a sold-out Soldier Field.
I do miss him on those college football broadcasts. He brought something a little bit different. It's great. Yeah, I didn't think the Colts were going to win that game on Sunday morning in Berlin, and somehow they found a way because Jonathan Taylor is the league MVP and Tyler Warren is one of the best rookie tight ends I've ever seen. Like the fact that they're 8-2 – and now their schedule gets a little bit more difficult than it was in the first half, right? They play Kansas City. Houston is around 500. Jacksonville's been around 500. Seattle's good. San Francisco's good. But even if you – like, I think most people thought this team would win between 7 and 9 games. If they can win just – what? How many games they got left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Even if you go 4-3, that's what, 12-5? And you're winning the division, that's a lot better than what anybody thought, especially when they had to turn to Daniel Jones. So, I mean, like, way ahead of what I think most people had expected.
Well, you know who would know better than anybody? The man who's always on the call, Matt Taylor, as the Colts have a bye week, a much-deserved bye week, ahead of a challenging game at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. Matthew, how are you?
What's happening, gentlemen? How are you guys?
Always great when Matt joins us.
Good to be back with you guys.
Did you bring some Wiener Schnitzel back?
Man, I walked down. You'll appreciate this story. I walked down about 5 blocks from the hotel, had some time to myself on Saturday, and I stumbled into like a little holiday market, a little Chris Kindle Mart, if you will, and I had the best bratwurst you've ever experienced in your life. Ooh, and it was all by happenstance, all by accident, wasn't planned at all. It was incredibly, as they say, serendipitous. And it was magical.
Oh, man. Damn it. I'm jealous. I can bet. Wow. Did you get another one?
I'll tell you, the mustard over there, I don't know what it is. It's different. It's got this little tang to it. It's not as, I don't know. It's not brown mustard, but it's also not traditional American mustard either. It's somewhere in the middle, and it just hit like a, like opening up your favorite present on Christmas Eve before Christmas Day. Like, it was so spot on.
Man, did you didn't bring any back? I would have bought some and brought it home.
Yeah, I don't know how I could have pulled that off, man. But I tell you what, in the moment, it was a 10 out of 10.
Well, Carly, you're saying Gordon was buying beers for everybody. She should have been buying mustard for everybody, it sounds like.
Yeah, a couple of packets. You know, you store those in your pocket on the way home. That's the way to go.
Oh, man. I'm telling you. All right, the best. This is perfect segue then. The best hot dog-ish type of thing that, you know, I include bratwurst in there, I've ever had was at the Sugar Bowl. And they had these gator sausage dogs. And they were so stinking good. They were, I remember, this is a long time ago, but they were $8 a piece. I ate $24 worth of those damn things.
Whoa.
They were good, man. I'm telling you. And then I searched the high heavens when I got home, and I've done it a second time on the internet, trying to find the gator sausage dogs sold in the Superdome, and I've never been able to do it. But, man, they were delicious.
Dustin, so wait a minute. Is it made of actual alligator?
Yeah. I mean, we're in Louisiana, man. This is a Superdome. Heck yeah.
Oh man, you're way more brave and adventurous than I am. Good for you.
Oh, it was good. You would have loved it. I promise you. Spice, just the right spices in there. Magical, like you said. Dustin, you're on the clock.
Well, I've also been to Germany. And it was, I don't think it was a food truck, but it was some sort of, it wasn't Oktoberfest either, but there was some sort of outdoor festival where they were selling like pretzels and bratwurst and kind of like almost like fair food type of stuff. Yeah. And that was, but I don't remember mine being quite as magical. Now I was also in college, Matt, so I may have also had some things that altered my memory, in my system when I was trying that, but, I'd have to say it was probably there, but I don't remember anything else in particular that sticks out to me in terms of the hot dog sausage bratwurst conversation.
Yeah, I think mine is probably inflated, admittedly, because I wasn't planned, wasn't looking for it. I just stumbled upon it, and it was like something great that just sort of like hits you in the face, right? So like,
yeah,
that just makes it better. That makes it, you know, heightened in your memory. But also I was like kind of hungry, so I was like, man, this tastes really good right now.
And yeah.
You know, I don't know, I didn't have the pleasure of like having to be able to like see the look on my face, but I just imagine stepping outside of my body, watching me eat in a public setting where I know literally no one, being able to watch me like as American as American gets in, right, Germany, eating this bratwurst and just savoring every bite, being like, oh my God, that's the best thing. One of the best things I've ever put in my mouth.
Wow, that's awesome, man. That's great to hear. I wish we'd had I'm getting very hungry. Right,
I needed a GoPro on me at that moment, right?
Oh yeah. That would have been awesome. That would have been some great video, man. Great promo video, but
yeah, like the travelogue on the Food Network.
Exactly. Oh, you should start doing that. The NFL travel in cities, NFL cities, great places, great finds. There you go. Matt's travels, baby. Taylor's takes.
There you go.
Got it all going. Oh man. Then you'd build it up and you'd start getting free food along the way.
Well, I don't know why we don't do this.
I'm telling you.
It seems so easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Justin wants to talk about buttered sausage. What the hell's buttered sausage?
That's
sausage
a
with butter on it.
That's a no. That's a reference to Gary Busey, in an old. It was an old clip. I don't know what buttered sausage is, but that's a Gary Busey reference.
I hate missing out on that. Then, daggone it, I wish I knew. But hey, speaking of buttered sausage, Indiana. the Colts, Indianapolis, take care of business over in Germany. They buttered their sausage, baby. Got out of there with a win. How about that segue, baby?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that was so subtle.
Hey, how about a great game, though, in Germany? I mean, if you're going to go to Germany, get your money's worth. And the fans there definitely got that with some extra football out of it.
Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. You know, the trip was just a blur in and of itself, just because it's so quick, you know. But the game itself was so memorable. I'll never forget it. It was... I mean, just first, let's just go in order, I guess, right? The stadium itself is historic, where, you know, that's where Jesse Owens, you know, broke four world records and won four gold medals and did, I mean, that's not to get political, but did it in the face of, you know, Nazi imperialism, right where, you know, Adolf Hitler was watching, you know, taking
it was in that stadium?
It was in Olympic Stadium where we were, yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that. How old is that stadium?
It opened in 1936, so they hosted the Olympics that same year.
Wow.
Yeah. Holy cow. And you know, to drive it home a little bit further, you know, obviously now it's primarily used as a soccer stadium, and it's 70,000 strong, and it was the first ever game in Berlin, right? The NFL's been in three German cities now. But it's the first game in Berlin, and where we were, they had to build. I'm gonna downplay it, but they had to build basically like a mock makeshift press box area, you know, where the media could sit, and they had to build, you know, carve out some areas in the stands where, you know, TV broadcasts and radio broadcasts could do their broadcast from. But where we were located inside the stadium, about 15 feet in front of us is where the original perch was, or platform was, where Adolf Hitler used to watch or take in games from within this stadium. And that I didn't really know how to feel about that, to be honest with you. I mean,
it's historical. You don't have to agree with it or like it. It's historical. Hell, you take it in. That's what you do.
100%. It just it made me feel like a lot of different things, is my point. You know what I mean? Like it made me feel, you know, overwhelmed with reverence for history, and you know, it made me feel you know, obviously just disappointed for, you know, the history that occurred within that city, and obviously what he did. And so it just was kind of an eerie feeling, you know, just being there and being so close. And somebody actually within the press had a picture from the vantage point that we were sitting in from the 1936 Olympics. And then they had this, you know, fancy app, you know, what we can do now with technology. And they actually took a picture from the vantage point that we are in, you know, presently, and they overlapped the current picture with the picture from 1936. I mean, literally, it was just steps away from where we were in terms of where he sat. It was just incredible. Again, a lot of emotions take over, you know, when you see something like that and when you're that close to history. But the stadium was just unbelievable, 70,000, and they were into it. It was just a collage of football. You know, there are, you know, I got to interview Roger Goodell before the game, and that was just eye-opening on the.
Oh, don't leave us hanging. Leave us hanging. There we go.
Oh, did I lose you guys? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. You were talking about Roger Goodell.
Yeah, I've interviewed Roger Goodell, and according to him, there's 20 million fans, NFL fans in Germany. And it's just a collage of teams out there. I mean, they love to support anybody and everybody, right? And so the entire stands is just made up of, you know, all 32 team jerseys, and people are just excited to be there to watch American football. And it's just a different culture. It's just a different, you know, way to take in a game over there compared to what we're used to here. I mean, during timeouts, you know, they're singing along to all the different songs, and then those those are bleeding into the live game action. It's 70,000 people, you know, singing a chorus of Sweet Caroline or Take Me Home by John Denver in the middle of the game. I mean, it's just, it's incredible and it's fun and they're into it. And then the game went the way that it went. It was exciting. There are a lot of big plays. It goes into overtime. The Colts win in walk-off fashion. It was just, it, like I said, incredibly memorable and fun. And, you know, these international games, whether you like it or not, they are here to stay because of the growth and the popularity and how successful these games are overseas.
Well, games, I think that they're more than that, man. They're going to become a major part of the NFL. I think, obviously, with the growth, the excitement. I mean, you look at Mexico, the fans that are in Mexico. You've got fans over in Great Britain and England and over there. So it's everywhere, and it's just going to continue to grow.
Yeah, and I mean, this week they're playing a game in Spain. Next year, there's talks of Australia. You know, there's all these different marketing rights. We've played games in Ireland earlier this year. You know, it really is a global game, and you're seeing the globalization of the talent that comes into the league as well with, you know, the International Pathway Program. And like I think we talked about this last week, you know, you have way more and more Polynesian players and Nigerian players. It's you know, the NFL's been at this now for about 10 to 12 years, and it's definitely working in terms of popularity and the globalization of sport and reaching all the different corners of the globe.
We're back here tomorrow to do it all again. And looking forward to it. See, Zach Osterman will be with us. Steve Wiltfong from On3 will be here to talk about this gigantic recruiting weekend that Indiana football has coming as well. So you won't want to miss that. Alec Lasley as well. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. Thank you guys so much. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.